7. Jim stayed moody and silent for a week. As Atticus had once advised me to do, I tried to climb into Jim's skin and walk around in it. If I had gone alone to the Radley place at 2 in the morning, my funeral would have been held the next afternoon, so I left Jim alone and tried not to bother him. School started. The second grade was as bad as the first, only worse. They still flash cards at you and wouldn't let you read or write. Miss Caroline's progress next door could be estimated by the frequency of laughter. However, the usual crew had flunked the first grade again and were helpful in keeping order. The only thing good about the second grade was that this year I had to stay as late as Jim, and we usually walked home together at 3 o'clock. One afternoon, when we were crossing the schoolyard toward home, Jim suddenly said, "There's something I didn't tell you." As this was his first complete sentence in several days, I encouraged him. "About what?" "About that night." "You've never told me anything about that night," I said. Jim waved my words away as if fanning gnats. He was silent for a while. Then he said, "When I went back for my breeches, they were all in a tangle when I was getting out of them. I couldn't get them loose. When I went back," Jim took a deep breath, "when I went back, they were folded across the fence, like they were expecting me." "Across and something else." Jim's voice was flat. "Show you when we get home. They've been sewed up. Not like a lady sewed them. Like something I'd try to do. All crooked. It's almost like somebody knew you were coming back for them." Jim shuddered. "Like somebody was reading my mind. Like somebody could tell what I was going to do. Can anybody tell what I'm going to do lest they know me? Can they, Scout?" Jim's question was an appeal. I reassured him. "Can anybody tell what you're going to do lest they live in the house with you? And even I can't tell sometimes." We were walking past our tree. In its knothole rested a ball of gray twine. "Don't take it, Jim," I said. "This is somebody's hiding place." "I don't think so, Scout." "Yes, it is. Somebody like Walter Cunningham comes down here every recess and hides his things, and we come along and take them away from him. Listen, let's leave it and wait a couple of days. If it ain't gone then, we'll take it, okay?" "Okay, you might be right," said Jim. "It must be some little kid's place. Hides his things from the bigger folks. You know, it's only when school's in that we've found things." "Yeah," I said, "but we never go by here in the summertime." We went home. Next morning, the twine was where we had left it. When it was still there on the third day, Jim pocketed it. From then on, we considered everything we found in the knothole our property. The second grade was grim, but Jim assured me that the older I got, the better school would be, that he started off the same way, and it was not until one reached the sixth grade that one learned anything of value. The sixth grade seemed to please him from the beginning. He went through a brief Egyptian period that baffled me. He tried to walk flat a great deal, sticking one arm in front of him and one in back of him, putting one foot behind the other. He declared Egyptians walked that way. I said if they did, I didn't see how they got anything done, but Jim said they accomplished more than the Americans ever did. They invented toilet paper and perpetual embalming and asked where would we be today if they hadn't. Atticus told me to delete the adjectives and I'd have the facts. There are no clearly defined seasons in South Alabama. Summer drifts into autumn, and autumn is sometimes never followed by winter, but turns to a days-old spring that melts into summer again. That fall was a long one, hardly cool enough for a light jacket. Jim and I were trotting in our orbit one mild October afternoon when our knothole stopped us again. Something white was inside this time. Jim let me do the honors. I pulled out two small images carved in soap. One was the figure of a boy. The other wore a crude dress. Before I remembered that there was no such thing as hoodooing, I shrieked and threw them down. Jim snatched them up. "What's the matter with you?" he yelled. He rubbed the figures free of red dust. "These are good," he said. "I've never seen any of these good." He held them down to me. They were almost perfect miniatures of two children. The boy had on shorts, and a shock of soapy hair fell to his eyebrows. I looked up at Jim. A point of straight brown hair kicked downwards from his part. I had never noticed it before. Jim looked from the girl doll to me. The girl doll wore bangs. So did I. "These are us," he said. "Who did 'em, you reckon?" "Who do we know around here who whittles?" he asked. "Mr. Avery. Mr. Avery just does like this. I mean carves." Mr. Avery averaged a stick of stove wood per week. He honed it down to a toothpick and chewed it. "There's old Miss Stephanie Crawford's sweetheart," I said. "He carves all right, but he lives down the country. When would he ever pay any attention to us? Maybe he sits on the porch and looks at us instead of Miss Stephanie. If I was him, I would." Jim stared at me so long I asked what was the matter, but got nothing, Scout, for an answer. When we went home, Jim put the dolls in his trunk. Less than 2 weeks later, we found a whole package of chewing gum, which we enjoyed, the fact that everything on the Radley place was poison having slipped Jim's memory.